Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back to IT Babble, everybody. I am Patrick, recording from the capital of the Hoosier State, Indianapolis, and I am joined, as always, with my good friend, Tony. Tony, how is island life in South Korea?
It's starting to make a turn for the better. The sun is up in the morning when I get up now, and it's not as cold. So
that's good.
The wind has died down, and so I'm hoping that the spring is nice, because the winter was pretty brutal.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be up there. Our winter, we had about a month where it was really bad, but it's really rainy here and gray, but the temperatures are in the 40s. Like upper 30s and to low 50s. So it's actually kind of nice. It's not too bad at all. Tony, I have to make an announcement before we get started with our agenda. Are you ready?
Okay.
It's a big one. So our next episode will be episode 150, and none other than Mr. Infamous Omar, the Lebanese Finnish, will be joining us. Omar Gosin will be joining us for the episode, he says. He's not going to play the kid card. He said he was absolutely in. He was, you know, so.
Well, I hope so. It's going to be a big one.
It is 150. That's a lot. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I don't think most podcasts get this far. So I'm excited. I'm very excited. Woo. All right. Anyway, so we're going to talk about Anchor, which is about a year old, and it's a podcasting service. We're going to talk about useless technology in the school, because there seems to be lots of it. Tony, you're going to talk about network monitoring, but I think it's time to talk about Wikispaces, because Wikispaces is going away. They are closing.
No way. Do you know how many times I've had a staff member tell me that they absolutely needed a Wikispaces account? And I was always like, here's the thing. Like, this is what really annoys me. First off, I have like a website. Actually, I have like three websites.
Yep.
And I maintain probably five, I would say, professional type of social media pages. So maybe under LinkedIn or like About Me, something like that.
Yep.
And like my profile on Twitter, all that is like for work, and I maintain it, and I pay for my websites so that as a professional, if there's something I need when I change to the next job, I have it. If it's something I feel like I cannot live without, I have it.
Yeah.
In fact, when I went in China, they didn't have any hosting set up at the school, and they, you know, it takes time to organize all this stuff because it was new. And I used my hosting to support the school for 6 months because there were things I needed, and I made sure those things were on my website before I took the job. And then even after they got hosting, I still kept my own website. Point being that wikis are supposed to maintain information for a long period of time.
That's right.
They're supposed to be like an index of knowledge, you know, that you can reference. So if you've set one up and you need it for your class or your subject, and it's not in your name, and you leave your school and they close it, what is that? I don't even understand what that is. So I would always have these people tell me, I've got to have Wikispaces. And I'm like, look, we have a hosting account, and I can just give you a wiki called like economics.school.com, and you can, you know, put up whatever you want. And they're like, no, it must be Wikispaces, only Wikispaces. I'm like, I don't really think there's a huge difference in wiki technology. And our hosting account has the same like template as Wikipedia if you want to use it. I don't like Wikipedia. Yeah, because it's not a successful model. So, and it would go like this. And then I would kind of refuse. And then they would go around to some administrator. And eventually I would have to contract them a Wikispaces account. And a year later, they would leave the school and we would have to close it down. I've probably done that 10 times.
I just remember when we were both in Dubai, there was IB economics teacher, Patrick something or other. And he had a Wikispace under his own name, under his own personal email. And for the people out there who don't know, IB is a 2-year course. It's not just, it's not like, you know, it's a 2-year course and it's very well mapped out. And he made a wiki space for his course that covered the 2 years every day of the 2 years.
Yep, every day.
And it was impressive. I mean, I was like, holy smokes. And so whenever he would go to an interview, he could just pull that thing up and be like, there it is. Look at that. And it is impressive to look at. But you know what? I tried Wikispaces. Man, that thing stinks. It was just hard to use. I mean, back in 2005 when it got started, I guess that's, you know, but in 2010 when I was playing around with it, it was not that easy to use. And there was Weebly out there and Wix and a bunch of other things that were much easier and I think a lot more flexible. But
well, I think a big lesson here, you know, like, again, that guy had some really good content. What's he going to do now?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can download. I have no idea. I'm sure that they'll give them an option to download that as an HTML. But
we're just getting to this point, and I'm noticing it with the students, and I'm going to try to tackle this like in semester two. And if it works out, I'm going to see if I can somehow get other teachers to do this. Just getting to a point where I've noticed that IT skills are sliding across the board. People are forgetting. You know how cheap hosting is? I mean, I'm looking at a package right now that will basically give us unlimited WordPress blogs with a lot of bandwidth and storage. And it's going to cost like $600 a year. But the system is set up so that I can literally have like huge WordPress blogs that the students are running, and then I can have like an overarching kind of management console on top of it.
Yeah.
And I'm spending the extra money for the templates and stuff because I don't want any setup time. That's it. Like, I could do the whole thing for like around $200, but $600 a year for maybe 10 student clubs and organizations to start, you know, blogging, putting their stuff up, the school radio, all of that. That's a very low amount of money. And that's basically the size of, that's enough for like a medium-sized company. Like, that's the package.
Yeah.
So if you're just an individual, we're talking like $60 to $100 a year. So if you feel like, you know, your career, like for your career, you want to have a web presence, you can do this. You really can. Like, the average person, I honestly believe, can do this. They can maintain it. They can learn how to keep it going for $60 to $100 a year. And if you consider the cost of just looking for a job, I mean, even if you're not an international teacher, the cost for looking for a job is high. Like, you buy clothes, you've got to get resumes, like, you've
travel,
got to do all the
you may
stuff.
Have to travel for
interview.
Interviews.
I mean, and $60 a year that has $60 to $100 a year that has your content, that follows you around, and then once you get started at the new job, you have it all there, like this guy, like he's ready to go from day one. And if your work is like, hey, we need you to put all of your information in the system, it's just a copy paste job.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's valuable. And for
people out there who are like, well, $100, who has $100? You know, just break it down per month. You know, let's say you have $100 per month. That's $8 a month. A month. You know.
Yeah. Just don't buy a latte.
Yeah. Like,
sacrifice a latte a week.
A week. 1 week. A month. And you'll be good to go. Yeah. Hosting is super cheap. Storage is super cheap. It's remarkable. And that's why, like, you know, colleges like St. Mary, when they come in, they give every student server space and a website. And it's just completely blank. And they're like, you can do whatever you want with it. And then when you leave, it's yours. You get to keep it. You get to do whatever you want with it. And I think that's great. I think it's very forward thinking. And you know, you can really build something pretty special out there for yourself, and like a living resume, like you were talking about there. And I think that's important stuff, especially nowadays. You know, good stuff. I like it.
Sorry, Wikispaces.
You're done. I never used you, but that's okay. But that leads us to our next, another web service. It's a new web service, Tony. It came out in 2017 called Anchor. Have you heard of this one yet?
Yeah, I haven't. I read through your podcast review of it.
So it's about podcasting, and they claim that they are the simplest, easiest way to podcast, and gosh darn it, if that's not true. The service is wonderful. It just is wonderful. It's fantastic. It really is, Tony. It's awesome. We, for out there for people who are listening in Radioland, we use Podomatic.com. They have a 500 megabytes of free storage, and we pay for extra bandwidth and we pay for extra storage. And it's not expensive. It's like $100 a year. It's really not bad. Anchor offers unlimited storage for free. Okay. Okay, so Tony, I want to ask you a question here before we start getting into the what I like about Anchor so much. I'm a little worried about it, and let me ask you a question here. And I found this somewhere in their support, and they're like, "Well, how is Anchor free?" And they're like, "Well, we're just focusing on people allowing people to create content. We believe people should be able to create content for free no matter where." Now, if you're a startup, Tony, and you're saying that you only care about the content that's created on your service, what does that to you? What does that mean? And ladies and gentlemen, we have not rehearsed this. I'm just putting it out there.
So they're saying that they just want you to fill it full of content, right?
Exactly. And they're a startup, a year old.
Yeah, it seems like to me that well, first off, they're probably just trying to get all of your data.
Yeah, maybe you can sign up with an email account, or you can sign in with your Twitter or Facebook account.
Right, and they want all of your content. So do they get the rights to your content after you publish it?
That's a good question. I didn't look into that. I did not look into that. Let me see if I can't pull that up right now and find out. I don't know. They seem very...
And then the other thing, too, is it also seems like they don't really have a business plan.
Well, in the latest... there was a TechCrunch article, which I linked to... and they allude that they're going to have features that you can pay for. Now, they didn't say what it was, but I imagine it could be like maybe jingles that you could put into your podcast or some other features. But let's see here. Intellectual property. nothing. But they talk about democratizing content on the web. So I imagine.
So you think they'll be like filtering it?
I don't think they'll be filtering it, but I think that they will. I think the content will be yours. But I have a feeling that. Yeah, I'm not. Let me see. Let me try the word owns here. Owns. I spelled it wrong. Man. Okay. Anyway. So while I'm searching here, let me talk about a little bit about Anchor. So there's mobile apps for your iPad, iPod, iPhone, and your Android smartphone and tablets, Android tablet. And you can podcast right from there, but you can upload your very own file. So if you want to record, kind of like what we're doing, recording and then then uploading it, you can totally do that, you know. So and then they have jingles that you can use to actually for transitions to break it up. And it's very smart. You can build it in. And if somebody has the Anchor app and listens to your podcast on Anchor, they can actually, and I'm doing air quotes here, they can call in from the app. But what it is leaving you an audio message, a voicemail. And then you can take
that's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. And then you can take that voicemail and you can add it into your podcast, which is sweet. And everything that you record, it shows up as segments, right? So we have a podcast. It's 45 minutes. We're going to do it in three segments. So you can have those three 15-minute segments, and you can pull them in and rearrange them however you like. It's really slick. It's very, very, very nice. It is very easy. And it's great. It's fast. It's responsive. It does really well. It's you can use a USB mic, or if you have a mixer, a USB mixer that you want to it's awesome. The only thing that they don't do is live streaming, which I have a feeling if they stick around, that could be something that they develop.
Yeah, I don't think live streaming is like that great. I mean, I know it's possible, but it just seems like live streaming is what everybody has the most problems with in terms of licensing and monitoring and everything.
For sure. But my fear with Anchor is that they will be purchased or they will not make enough money and they will shut down.
Mm.
That's my fear. That's my fear. But I mean, if you're a teacher out there and you want to do podcasting, Anchor is where you need to go. That is it. But if you want to have a podcast like ID Babble that's going into episode 150, Anchor may, I think you got to wait. You got to wait and find out. They also have a neat feature, Tony, where you can transfer your podcast.
Oh.
Yeah, so I could sign up and I can say, well, here's my IT Babble. And I tried it a little bit and it found a podcast and it said, well, here's your new RSS feed. Update this in iTunes. Okay. And then go to Podomatic. They told me to kind of go to Podomatic and kind of update the RSS feed, like put in my own RSS feed, like which was the Anchor RSS feed. So if people went to Podomatic to find our podcast, it would redirect them to Anchor. Kind of sneaky, a little sneaky there, but no, it's great.
I'm on their website and I clicked jobs at Anchor.
Yeah.
Did you do that?
No, not yet. No.
And at the bottom, it's got lists all their characteristics like passionate, collaborative, creative, not assholes. That's one of their characteristics.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Very nice. But I got to say, I really like this service. I really do. And if you're a teacher, because that's one of the most intimidating things for a teacher, Tony. Like when they want to do podcasting, they're like, oh my God, do I have to learn Audacity? Do I have to learn GarageBand? Do I have to learn Pro Tools? You know, do I have to figure out like what microphones? How much money do I have to build a podcasting studio? And with Anchor, really, you just need a device that has a microphone, even though it'll sound like garbage. It will sound like garbage. People, please use an external microphone, a USB microphone, something, but it will sound like garbage.
So do you recommend recording directly on Anchor or recording and then uploading?
I recommend recording and then uploading. But if you're a school and you're strapped for cash and you don't have that ability, then record right on Anchor. That's fine. They have a website, so if you have a Chromebook, you don't need an app. You just go to anchor.fm and log in. Boom. Have them record right there. It's super simple. It's straight. It's pushed right up in your face. It's really easy. And they give you it's a really, really, really good. It's probably the best service I've seen in quite a while, to be honest. And I don't like to gush about stuff. I mean, I gushed about Edmodo. But Anchor is right up there, you know. If they can stay open, then that'd be sweet. But I can just see another company, Apple, Google, anybody, buying them up and then taking whatever material they want from it and then just closing the door.
You know, and it's weird, too, because Apple had it, right? They had the podcast server and everything. They had it all built in.
They did.
And it worked great, and then they just killed it.
Yeah. So for the people out there who don't know, Apple doesn't host any podcasts. None. Zero. You have to host your podcast somewhere else and then give Apple an RSS feed, and then that's how it works. And it works pretty well. But
and Apple used to have software called Podcast Producer.
Yeah.
And you had to have iOS. You had to have the OS X server, but it was cheap. And you could run this server at your school. You could do all of your podcasting and distribution internally at your school. So you could, you know, do it privately. And then they kind of got rid of the server. And then I was like, okay, but they still have the software, so you can still make it with their software. You can make all your podcasts and it encodes it and whatever and put it on iTunes. And then they got rid of the software.
Yeah. I think, you know, places like Podomatic and Anchor will help walk you through what you need to do on how to distribute your podcast. Like if you want it on Google Play, if you want it on iTunes, they have very nice step-by-step directions on how to do it. Both of them do, which is good. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. If Anchor sticks around, Tony, we may be switching to Anchor. Who knows?
All right. Let's try it out.
Yeah, I like it.
I might try it out, actually. I've got some kids coming next week. We're going to try to form the school radio station. And, you know, I won't let them do it live because they're not good enough. It's going to take them a long time.
Yeah.
So I was like initially thinking we'll record it and just put it on YouTube. But I get so sick of those YouTube ads.
Oh, yeah.
and we want this to be playing in the morning during advisory. So, okay, I'm going to try it out. I'm going to test this platform out with my students.
Hey, Tony, I got a really quick thing here. You brought up YouTube. I just want to kind of throw it out there. In South Korea, is YouTube under attack? Because in here in America, YouTube is very much under attack by tech blogs. Saying that they don't do it, you know, because the whole Logan Paul thing and the whole, they're saying they don't, they want YouTube to monitor content much more strictly. And I'm wondering if you get that feeling in South Korea.
I don't know if they want them to monitor it more, but I can tell you the advertisement is so out of control that you will get like an ad between every video you play and you will get a pop-up ad on videos while you're playing them.
Wow. Jeez.
So it's getting to the point where, you know, if you sign into Chrome with your Google Apps account, you can control some YouTube stuff. But like a lot of people who aren't signed into Chrome, if they're just, you know, on their computer and they pull up Safari or something, YouTube is just, it's just unregulated.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why we can't somehow list our IP address so that any connections from our IP address have a filtered YouTube.
That would be sweet. I would even pay for that, you know?
Yeah, the school has a static IP. We should be able to list it and get advertisement-free YouTube. And you're right, we would pay for it. But, like, I just don't think they're asking the right questions. Individuals probably won't pay for YouTube, but, like, companies would and schools would.
Yeah, I think they would. Yeah.
And what we're paying for is no ads from this IP address. That's really it. I don't think that's a hard technology.
No, I don't think so. I think they can definitely do it if they wanted to. It's just...
Unfortunately, I think they're in a downward spiral. I think there's going to be a lot of changes coming in the next few years.
Yeah, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And I don't think those changes are going to be very well received by the YouTube community on a whole. Maybe... I don't know. It's interesting. I'm going to watch it. We're going to watch it for sure. Logan Paul is just the tip of the iceberg.
Everybody just needs to know this. Podcasting or distributing asynchronously. So forget podcasting. Distributing media asynchronously on a schedule, meaning it pops up automatically in somebody's player, isn't hard. It's not new. And you can do it for free. And you can do it with like fairly cheap hosting. All you have to pay for is the storage. And actually, now with compression technology, I feel like most schools could probably store like a few hundred hours of video pretty cheaply if they did it right. So I'm just throwing it out there because, again, some of this stuff, I'm like, do we really need it? So if you have a Synology, which we just got a Synology. The price has come down a lot on these like Synology network assisted storage drives. They're super fast. They're designed to stream. Like they'll play video in real time if you want. But you can put that in your school and still use tools on the public internet to access that video. So like you can pay like $100 a year for the interface and you just buy the hardware, keep it in your building, connect to it. And people can use something like iTunes. They actually can use iTunes and access that content and watch it. So I'm just throwing it out there because, again, I think we've gotten dependent on a lot of free stuff. The stuff is starting to, like, get worse. And there's no reason everyone needs to freak out and think it's the end of the world because it's not. No. We literally can just go back to using the same tools. And, you know, a lot of these tools are the same tools that you're – getting for free. I mean, YouTube and some of these other companies, they're innovative and they've got a lot of proprietary technology, but a lot of it is built on top of open source technology. And that's why it's tricky for them to charge for it.
Ah, so never thought about that. Very interesting.
They're using a lot of free open source stuff, but the other part of that is they can only charge for a service. They can't sell their tech. I think it's the only reason BlackBerry's still alive, right? They have their BlackBerry server.
Yeah.
So,
and they have other technology that they license out to I know for Android for sure that they license out some stuff to Android.
Yeah, but you know, if you're building on Android, you can't sell Android. You can only sell the handset solution.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's two sides to all of this stuff. So just don't freak out. It's still out there.
It is. Yeah. It's yeah. There's, even if YouTube were to die tomorrow, it'd be okay. It would be okay.
I think plenty of other options. Save some lives.
Yeah, probably. Anyway, let's transition into our next topic here, which is useless technology. So, Tony, I was reading TheVerge.com, and I saw this thing called the Tap Wearable. And I'm going to try to describe it for you. I know you've seen it because you said you looked at this post as well. So it's like they're like five rings that go around each of your fingers. And they're all connected, yeah. And it's Bluetooth, so it connects to your smartphone. And depending on how you tap your fingers, it will type for you. Not like a QWERTY keyboard, like there's a particular method. They say it takes about an hour to learn. And this thing is useless. It looks ridiculous. nobody's going to use this damn thing. It is awful. But I can see schools going, oh my gosh, this is the future of tech. This is the future of typing. This is it. We're going to have to, we should buy a couple of these, you know? And I think they're about $140. Oh, I'm sorry. Here it is. $150 a piece. You know, you can get a Bluetooth keyboard from Anker for $20, and that thing is rock solid. And it can work for Mac or PC. They have both, and they are awesome. This thing is ridiculous. And I'm wondering what other stupid and useless technology schools have, because schools love to buy stuff that is useless. And I'm wondering if you have any over there in South Korea. You're a pretty new school, so I don't know if you guys have any.
We have some pretty stupid stuff. So that, I guess, was just part of a, like, I guess it was just part of a generic order that all schools get.
Yeah.
That if you're being built like in Korea, you just get stuff. Like, there is, in every classroom, they put like a public address system amplifier that you can plug like four microphones into. And it has like old school copper wires going to like a speaker. Wow. And you're supposed to plug your laptop into it for sound.
Wow.
And every single person I know removed it, put it in a shelf, and connected their laptop to the speaker in their projector through like HDMI, and that was over. And these things weigh—I'm not kidding—they weigh like 40 pounds each. Like, I'm like, what do we do with these things? And they're amps, like they're hot, like they're huge, and yeah, it's like something you would have at like a rodeo for announcing the winners.
Wow.
And then the other thing that always like blows my mind is the amount of teachers who order portable CD players.
Yeah.
I see that all the time, and I'm like, what? Who? What? And they order them through like the people who like supply furniture. It's not through IT, and it's always a mistake. They don't ever work. They work like what? Maybe a month.
Yeah,
because the CDs. Okay, so you've got a few problems here. First, the CD players themselves might be new, but probably the components for the CD drive, if it's just CDs, I mean, sometimes it's not even DVDs; they just weigh CDs. Those components have probably been in a warehouse for like a decade. But they're like, oh yeah, but I need to play CDs, and the computer doesn't come with CDs, and I'm like, did you check the like textbook or whatever, because it's probably just online and you can play it and download it.
Yeah.
And almost every time it is, but they don't check. It's just that some textbook shipped with a CD. And then what happens is the textbook, the teacher edition, ships with like one CD, right? So they have this one CD, and then the CD stops working. It gets scratched, or it's just old and it doesn't work. And then there's no way to get another one. You can't buy another CD.
Yeah, because they don't make them anymore.
They don't make them, or they want you to order the textbook again. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Or teachers have burnt their own CDs. Now, not only is that like illegal, but the CD player won't always play them. And it's like, why doesn't it play it? I burned it at home. It's like, well, because, you know, it doesn't support like MP3 format, whatever. It's like, but it's a CD. It's like,
yeah,
it doesn't matter that it is on a CD. It's not the right format. And so these things are always like, I've never seen one last more than a year. And I remember seeing like stacks of them in the hallway at the end of the year to be thrown away. And the next year they order new ones.
Oh, that's the worst.
Oh. So I even will tell teachers, I'm like, hey, if you have CDs or DVDs, if you just drop them off in the IT office, we will put them on the network so that you can play them. And this whole concept is actually really easy for us to do, but I can't tell you the number of people who will not drop off the CDs and DVDs. They just won't do it. I'm like, just if you bring them by the office, I need like an hour, and then they can just be on the network and you can just play them with your laptop. You don't need the CD player.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it is. Like, I don't get it. But yeah, and there are some CD players. Like, they bought some CD players and put them in some rooms. And the CD players aren't actually CD players. They're like DJ mixing little things. So you like put two CDs in and you're supposed to fade left to right. Like, there's no way they can even use them. Like, no one even knows how to use them. I told the school to just pull them out. Like, we're not going to train teachers how to use them. It's only like four classrooms. So I'm like, I'm not going to go in there and try to figure out how to use this like DJ turntable thing. Just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, our school recently, our librarian just recently said that, she's getting rid of all of her VHS tapes, getting rid of all of them. 2018, folks.
Wow.
2018.
Well, I guess with the copyright law in the US, I think the issue is, let's say that you did, like, back in the day, you bought like a good series on World War II. The information is still relevant, and if you have to repurchase it in DVD format, it's just so expensive.
So we ran into that. We had a teacher who had a bunch of Electric Company VHS tapes, and you know, it's PBS, right? It's public broadcast system. The license is pretty relaxed, a little bit more relaxed than say a Disney video, and there is no DVD option for this, you know.
Oh,
none at all, because these are specially made, and all they are is phonics, right? They've taken phonics they've compiled phonics out of a whole bunch of different Electric Company shows. And for people who don't know, Electric Company is like Sesame Street. It's kind of, you know, and it's on PBS. It's free, and so she had no way. So what we did is we did rip those into a DVD for her. But then there's other things. Now, a teacher did drop off a whole bunch of stuff, and you know, it's like ABC. I was like, I can't rip that. That is definitely copyright. National Geographic, that is definitely copyright protected. There's no way I can legally rip that, and we're not going to do that. So, yeah, we got a bunch of that. We got a whole bunch of that. Arr! Yeah, another thing is with our PA system, we have this very fancy new problematic PA system. It's about a year and a half old. And you know what they threw in for free? Just for free, Tony. They gave us you just put it right in the rack, a cassette player that goes right into the...
Yeah, just in case, like... Just in case you got some tapes laying around.
Yeah,
we need to.
Yeah, we can just.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous. Stupid. And it's like, well, what if you want to record something? I'm like, okay, well, let's say I do. Where can I listen to it besides this room? Like the public library? Is that, you know, is that where we're going? I mean, if you put in any kind of like audio rack in the last like 10 years, you can get a hard disk recorder thing. It goes in the rack and actually just has a little USB on the outside. And all it does is let you put a USB in and record to the USB. So I get it, but at the same time, like, I mean, I've got a new Apple laptop and I can't even listen to the USB on that thing. Oh. Like, it's ridiculous. I mean, that's where our world is going. People need to, like, kind of get with this. I mean, basically, if you want to do recording, I think anymore, if you're planning any new spaces and you want to do recording, it's not expensive to say, why don't we put an Ethernet jack in this room and record to something like a Synology? And Synology is just a brand, but it's really common. And if you look it up, you'll understand. Because that thing could probably let, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 people in different rooms record live at the same time. And that's what we have now. And, like, all the equipment, all the phones, laptops, that's what it's all geared towards. It's all geared towards, like, wireless interaction. And it's geared horribly. Like, it's horrible. But, I mean, you want to carry a dongle around and, like, connect your USBs to it? Or do you just want to get it over the Wi-Fi? That's what you have to ask yourself. And if you have a tape deck, man.
Oh, God.
Do you remember in 2012 or 2013 when those tape decks showed up in Dubai? Those big blue ones? And we thought they were old. We thought there was some kind of ripoff, but it was from a new catalog out of the UK.
Yeah.
And they were touting them as, like, one of the best things schools can buy for recording. And I was like, what is this?
I don't know.
And the quality was horrible. That's the thing.
Yeah. CD quality is so much better. And you can get CD quality online. You could put it on, it just depending on how you're recording it, you know? And
let's take it up. Let's take this to the other side. Let's say you're like, digital compression and audio is horrible. Great. Well, you're not going to be able to, like, use a tape deck and beat it. If you want to beat it, you're going to have to use, like, 2-inch tape reel to reel. You're going to have to spend, like, a few $1,000s per recording and go reel to reel like a recording studio.
Or you could just do it digitally, you know.
So if you're going to be like, no, man, recording digitally is horrible. Well, you can't use a cassette and you can't use a CD. You're going to have to go reel to reel. Look at how much those things cost and figure out how to get the reel to reel tape in. Good luck. Like, I don't know. Like, I hear so many ridiculous arguments. It's really clear. There's warehouses of equipment all over the world. And somebody knows somebody's cousin and they're like, look, when we open this school, you finally can sell your tape decks. That's how it goes.
Yeah. 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 I mean, the company that installed the PA system and they gave us this tape deck for free. I mean, they were just trying to get rid of it. That's the bottom line. They're like, we don't want this in our warehouse anymore. Please take it for free. We don't care what you do with it. And we're going, I can tell you right now, we are going to recycle that thing in this summer. we've got to
just let the kids take it apart. Just let them take it apart. That could be like a detention. Take it apart, put it back together, record your voice, play it back.
Yeah, and then take it apart again.
Yep.
Awesome. All right, so useless technology. It's in every school. Ugh, there's nothing you can do about it. There's just nothing you can do about it. I mean, you can recycle it, but more is going to come in. People are going to – they'll buy it with their classroom budget. They'll just bring it in from home. It's bad. It's there. It's just reality. So, Tony, last topic here, network monitoring. And I have no idea what you – but it's on there. So.
Yeah, so I haven't written a blog post about this because it's part of my slow rollout here. There's some people who are nervous because I didn't turn everything on at once. But, you know, I've learned that I can't do everything by myself. And so I'm training a lot of people to, like, be involved in the process, and it's slow. So anyway – we've got the kids, like, the kids log in with their full name and password to the Wi-Fi. That's how it works. That is my only design that I think is acceptable for grade 6 and up. They have to log in. And I want to know who you are. And, you know, the next level of that is how many devices do they get to log in. So anyway, I'm making them log in. And now, because they log in, even if they have a VPN or something, it doesn't matter because you can see their bandwidth. Like, you can see what they're doing. And even if you can't see exactly what they're doing, you know, like, if kids are sending data, receiving data, there's a lot of information that you get. Most kids don't have VPNs, so I can see what websites they're going to. I get a lot of information. So the question is, what do you do with this information? Now, I could be like, you're on Facebook, I'm shutting your internet off. Boom.
I can
do that. But I'm like, that's not going to accomplish anything because the kid isn't going to understand. First off, where's he at when I shut him off? Maybe he's in math class. I shut him off. When am I going to talk to him? The same day, hopefully, but maybe not till the next day. It just doesn't work. There's no follow up. So what I decided to do is I'm working on what I like to call like a little communications protocol that I'd like to teach the teachers. It's just based on engagement. So we put the data together. You scan it. You're kind of looking for outliers, like students who are like on Facebook way too much, or students who are obviously serving video games from their laptops to their buddies or something like that. You find these outlier kids and then you just talk to them about it. So like the other day, I had two kids who I knew were up to something and I pulled their data. And then the next day they came in, I put their records up on the screen behind me. It was just us two in the room. All the other kids were in another room. I'm like, hey, you guys, look at this. This is your internet activity yesterday. I want to talk to you about it. And I'm like, you're not in trouble. I just want to know, like, why are you doing this? Like, what? Like, you were complaining about not having enough homework time. You were complaining about needing more time for whatever. Look how much time you wasted yesterday. And this one kid was like, look, I wasn't really on Facebook that long because I was looking at his data. And I was like, well, according to this, this is the average size of a Facebook page. So this means you've scrolled down, page down, like over 2,000 times yesterday. And he's like, what? I'm like, yeah, you went through 2,000 page views on Facebook. He was like, really? I'm like, yeah. You don't realize how much time this is taking away from you. Yeah. And then, you know, the other kid, I was like, according to this, you have a VPN on your laptop. And he's like, I don't. I really don't. I'm like, well, according to this, you have something running on your laptop that's sending bad data back into our network and saying that you're a threat. So what do you think that could be? Like, I'm not getting on his laptop to look. I'm letting him know that we know, and I'm asking him questions about it because I want him to think about it. Like, I want him to think about this free game he downloaded that's actually doing something bad.
Yeah.
You know? And so I know this is in its early phases, but I'm working on this like whole concept of if you see kids doing something, just talk to them about it. Yeah. Like, address it as like, hey, what do you think that's worth your time? Do you think other students are doing this? Like, do you think that if you're competing with, like, in this case, you're a Korean child, you're going to be competing against all other Koreans for quotas to get into universities. Do you think the kids who are going to get in are wasting their time on this stuff? Like, that's how I'm taking it. I am trying to, like, literally just find these outlying kids and engage them. And I want their teachers to engage them. Like, if the kids make it on the list, instead of shutting their internet down initially, like, we might have to at some point, but if we do that, because we have electronic textbooks, we're going to have to give them a place to go to work. So instead of, like, being super punitive, I'm trying to just develop this thing. And I found that teachers just aren't comfortable having these conversations. And I did this workshop like a couple years ago called Difficult Conversations with Jennifer Abrams. And at first I thought it was going to be like some kind of weird, like, I don't know, social justice warrior, liberal engagement thing.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. I didn't know much about Jennifer Abrams. She's really great. And she's written like 9 books on how to have difficult conversations with people who are either at your level, above your level, below your level. And she looks at like all these things that make people uncomfortable. And she actually has conversation protocols. And she tells people, if you're uncomfortable, but you're responsible and you don't know what to say, you grab this protocol from my book and you just follow it step by step. Just follow it. Just have it in front of you and read it because you're responsible. You have to do this.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, you know, maybe that's what I need to do. Maybe I need to like customize just a simple protocol so teachers know how to engage students about technology. So they know how to say things like, I was looking at your network statistics and this is what we noticed. Your top three activities are the following. And that's okay. However, you have a C in math and you say you don't have enough time to study. Well, I looked at this and you have wasted this much time on X. That's what I want them to be able to do. So I don't know if it's going to be successful, but I'm going to try it because our campus is so big. It's made me really rethink everything. security, fire drills, everything. It just doesn't work when you have 9 buildings and 22 acres and they're spread out.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't work. I mean, you can't just, like, police everybody all day unless you're going to, like, quadruple your staff. And if you did that, they wouldn't be teaching staff. You know, you would be bringing in all these people to do non-educational work in a school. And that's generally like a no-no financially. Like, you want your money going to people who are full-time teachers, not other people. So anyway, I'm working on it. I actually feel really positive about it because I think it's like if I were a high school student, with a laptop, I would be super devious all the time. Like, I know that if I were when I was a teenager, I didn't have a laptop, but if I did, I would have been devious, constantly trying to circumvent the rules.
Of course.
And if somebody would have come up to me and said, "Hey, you know, I see what you're doing. It's not like illegal or anything, but you really need to stop. And this is why. Let's just talk about it." And I don't know. I think that's worked on me as an adolescent with other things, you know, like playing sports. You know, if you have bad habits, like you're playing basketball or football and you have bad habits, your coach just doesn't yell at you and tell you that you're stupid. Your coach comes over and says, "You have a really bad habit. Like, you're lowering your head. If you do that in a game, you're going to break your neck. This is how you can prevent it. This is what's happening." And then they have the game, they have the film, right? They have the video. And they're like, "Watch what you did in this last play." I always thought that was, like, really helpful. So I'm just trying to take it that way.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to take it. I mean, as educators, that's what you want to do. Like, you want to take a look at how to improve this person, you know, in that
aspect.
But I
can't do it alone. You know, if you have to do it by yourself, you just have to be the overarching technology gargoyle. You just got to be up there shutting people down. But if I can get the teachers to participate in this, like, kind of protocol, maybe it will be effective.
I think you need teacher buy-in, or it's going to fail because they're like, "Okay, I'm going to see Mr. DePrato, so I know I've got a this and this and this. But as soon as I get back to, you know, math class, you know, I'm just going to wait a couple of days and then I'm going to start doing it up again." Yeah, I think you're right. You need those teachers also to kind of keep an eye. And again, you're not looking to bust and yell at the kid. You're getting an opportunity to do that. You're an opportunity to kind of show them, "Hey, this isn't so good. This isn't helpful for you. This isn't helping you achieve where you want to go or where you want to go." I'm sorry, I just screwed it up there.
Like, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
What are you getting out of it?
Yeah, yeah. What I mean, other than like a quick little distraction during the day, I mean, how is this helping you achieve your goals, you know, and getting to university?
One thing I'm doing this semester, because this year I'm teaching, next year I'm not, but I'm trying to work on a few things. Like, and one of them is I did this with my high school class last semester as an experiment, because I believe if you're a teacher, you need to, like, test things out first. I don't think you should be like, "This curriculum is awesome, I'm going to give it to everybody." I think you should run it with a small group. I've asked a teacher this coming semester to work 2 days a week with the grade 6 kids on the Minecraft EDU. And I'm like, it looks cool, but I don't want to put this out there if we don't really think it's going to work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, one thing I'm doing this semester is my first class with every group of students, we're going to do a little Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours exercise. And I'm going to ask them to come up with something they like to do, figure out how much time it would take them from right now to master it if they could commit 3 hours a day to practice 6 days a week. And I'm going to do that so they can see how long it will take. And then I'm going to ask them to calculate how much time a day they spend playing games or they're on, like, social media.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to do it with every class to start. And I'm also going to use it as a pre-assessment, because I always try to come up with little pre-assessment schemes to see how well the kids do at problem solving, because they're going to have to think about, okay, well, how do I calculate this? And how do I take this and spread it over so many years? And how do I figure out, like, how many hours I'm working on social media if my engagement's only, like, a few minutes each time? So I'm going to, like, kind of guide them through that. But I want them to, like, do this problem solving and come up with a number and then come up with another number and say, okay, well, it looks like, and this is what I found in my high school class, it looks like if you just didn't do social media, at all, you could achieve this without any problem. So now the question is, what value, where's your value going to go? Like, I'm not saying you have to stop social media, but like you said, this is something you'd really like to master. You think you can make a lot of money at it, or you love it, and you could achieve it by the time you're like 21, or you can waste all of your time like LOLing stupid photos.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It might not do anything to them, but I really want them to think about this concept of time.
There is only so much of it. There is only
so,
so
yeah,
much of
I'm
it.
Just like, I think that's the difference, though. Like, if you work in educational technology or normal technology, this is the difference. All the hardware and software, it's all the same. It's just what you do with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I was at a bank, I would just shut them down and have them fired.
Get out of here. You're done.
Go Facebook somewhere else.
Nice. All right. All right, I think that's it. I think we're done for the show. I think we're finished. Do you have anything you need you want to add, or?
Nope. Not. I think that's it. I'm out.
I'm out too. So for IT Babble, I am Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And you can find us on itbabble.com for our blog, and subscribe to us on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. And we will see you on the next episode. Keep babbling out there.